And now, the next word of the gong, the time will be 8 o'clock on Springbok Radio. Your best buy in radios is an ever-ready transistor. Ever-ready. This is Playhouse 90. From the stages and studios, producers and playwrights of the world, the makers of Bayer Aspirin, Stern's Pine Tar and Honey, Phillips Milk and Magnesia, California Syrup of Figs, and Insto Eye Drops bring you the week's finest radio entertainment, Playhouse 90. Tonight's Playhouse 90 presents one of the greatest love stories of all time, the romance between Elizabeth Barrett and the famous poet Robert Browning. It tells of a man's devotion which inspires a delicate woman with the courage to defy a selfish, tyrannical father and find happiness with the man she loves. The distinguished British actor D. Mervyn Johns portrays Edward Moulton Barrett, Yolande Dotman, his daughter Elizabeth, and Harold Freed plays Robert Browning.
Yes, Miss Elizabeth. It's this increasingly low vitality of yours that worries me. Yes. No life in you. None. Well, what are we going to do about it?
Well, Doctor, if you shut a person up in one room for years on end, you can't very well expect to find her bursting with life and vigor.
To tell you the truth, I'm not sure that brain of yours isn't altogether too active. Seriously, aren't we perhaps overdoing our studies?
Of course not.
Still hard at Greek?
Oh, not more than 2 or 3 hours a day.
Oh, dear, dear, dear. Now, why not give all these heavy labors a rest and turn your mind to something light and easy for a change? Poetry. You're not neglecting your poetry, I hope.
Meaning something light and easy. Oh, Doctor, I must remember to tell that to Mr. Robert Browning when I see him.
Robert Browning? A poet, hmm?
Don't tell me you've never heard of him.
Well, my dear, poetry isn't much in my line, you know. Still, I suppose we mustn't rob you of your mental exercises if they keep you contented.
Contented? Oh, Doctor, I shudder to think what my life would be like without them.
Yes, yes, quite so, yes. And this isn't the liveliest house for anyone to live in, let alone an invalid.
No, I suppose not. I wish Papa were a happier man. It would make such a world of difference to all of us.
Happier, hmm? He's no business of mine. But when a man has good health, plenty of money, and a family of boys and girls, I can't see why he should make life a burden to himself and others. No. If only I could prescribe some sort of change for you. Something, anything to get you out of these dismal surroundings for a time. Tell me now, Elizabeth, have you ventured on your feet at all lately?
No, hardly at all.
I wish I knew how to get you fit and well.
Flash, my darling. Yes, Wilson?
Begging your pardon, miss, but the master wishes most particularly to see you, Dr. Chambers, before you leave, sir.
Oh, yes, of course, of course. And high time I were off. Is your master in his study?
Yes, sir.
Well, goodbye, Miss Elizabeth. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Doctor.
You needn't see me downstairs, Wilson. I know my way.
Thank you, sir. I'm just going to post your letters, Miss Barr. Shall I take Plush with me?
Oh, yes. How I wish I could go with you.
Oh. Oh, you will one day, Miss Barr. Quite soon. Come, Plush.
Oh, 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 dear. Careful, Miss Henrietta. You nearly knocked me down.
Oh, I'm sorry, Wilson. Oh, Elizabeth. I feel I'm going to erupt. Oh, dinner was awful.
But Henrietta...
Awful, awful, awful.
Worse for Fad.
Yes, he was. It was awful. He was in one of his moods, the worst kind. The nagging mood is bad enough. The shouting mood is worse. But don't you think the dumb mood is the worst of all?
Yes, perhaps.
I believe there were more than a dozen remarks all through dinner, and most of them were frozen off at the tips. Papa would just turn his glassy eyes on the speaker. Directly dinner was over, he ordered his port to be taken to the study, and thank heaven he followed it almost at once.
Oh, you're here, Henrietta. I've been looking for you everywhere. Papa has just sent you this note from his study.
For me? Oh, dear. When he starts sending out notes from his study, look out for squalls. I have heard this morning that your aunt and Uncle Headley and your cousin Bella have arrived in London earlier than was expected and propose to call on you tomorrow at 3:00. I have written to invite your uncle and aunt and cousin to dinner next Thursday. Papa. Well,
I understand now why Papa seemed so displeased at dinner.
Vile-tempered, you mean?
Are you quite fair, Henrietta? Papa seldom objects to us receiving our friends here.
For a cup of tea and a bun. And so long as the house is clear of them before he's back from the city. Has any of us ever been allowed to ask anyone to dinner? Or even to luncheon? What enrages me is that I was expecting a friend tomorrow at 3:00. And now I shall have to put him off somehow.
Well, why must you put your friend off? The Headleys won't eat your friend.
What business is that of yours?
But Henrietta.
I hate people prying into my affairs.
Oh, dear. What can be the matter with her tonight? Usually she quite enjoys being teased about Captain Surtees' cook.
Perhaps she may have begun to take his attention seriously.
Oh, I hope not. You remember when young Mr. Palfrey wanted to marry her 2 years ago? Those dreadful scenes with Papa.
I should rather forget them.
Oh, why can't Henrietta realize that if there's one thing Papa will never, never permit, it's a marriage in the family. Doesn't worry me at all. The gentleman never attracted me in that way.
Henrietta's very lovely.
But Papa would never agree to any kind of understanding between them.
I'm sorry. I left in a temper, but I couldn't help it. I'm so miserable.
Miserable, dear? But what's happened?
Yes, miserable and so wildly happy. Oh, I shouldn't tell you about it, because if Papa asks if you had any idea of what was going on, you'll have to lie, which you hate doing, or admit that you knew. And then he'd vent half his rage on you for not warning him in time.
Never mind, dear. Go on.
Surtees has asked me to marry him.
Oh, Henrietta.
And of course I accepted him and said that I couldn't. And I had to tell him that we must never see each other again.
You're not talking sense, Henrietta. What really has happened?
Oh, I don't know. Except that we both love each other terribly. Oh, dear. Is there anything at all to be said for Papa's attitude towards marriage? Can it possibly be wrong to want a man's love desperately and to long for babies of my own?
No. But who am I to answer a question like that? Love and babies are so remote from my life.
Yes, I know. You're a woman apart. But love and babies are natural to an ordinary girl like me. And what's natural can't be wrong.
And yet the holiest men and women renounce these things.
I dare say. But I'm not holy. And come to that, neither is Papa. Not by any means.
Henrietta.
Well, didn't he marry and have 11 children? Come in.
Mr. Robert Browning has called me.
Oh, Mr. Browning.
Yes.
Elizabeth, were you expecting him?
But I thought...
Of course. I know you've been corresponding with Mr. Browning for months, as I've posted any number of your letters to him. But then you write to so many literary people whom you absolutely refuse to see.
Has Papa given his permission?
Yes, of course. But why have you made an exception of Mr. Browning? Oh, I've heard he's wonderfully happy.
Oh, Henrietta, you're incorrigible.
I know he's been most anxious to call. Mr. Kenyon told me so.
Miss Elizabeth, the gentleman is waiting.
Then I'd better be off. Come, Arabel.
Oh, no, no, stay here. I can't see him. I don't feel up to it. I can't.
Papa, what on earth's the matter?
I really don't feel that I can see him. Wilson, tell Mr. Browning, I'm very sorry, but I'm not well enough to receive him.
But that's not true, Bar. You can't send him away like that. It would be too rude and unkind after having asked him to call and all the efforts he's made to get here. Where's Mr. Browning, Wilson?
I showed him in the library.
But I'd much rather not see him.
Oh, Elizabeth, you're not a silly schoolgirl. And Mr. Kenyon says he's wonderfully romantic-looking. Oh, come, Arabel. Let's go and tell him Elizabeth is ready to receive him.
Well, I'm not sure I'm at all happy about this.
Oh. Is my hair tidy, Wilson?
Yes, Miss Barr.
Oh, please arrange the croupier. And put Flush's cushion here.
Thank you.
And Wilson?
No.
No, thank you. That will do.
You may go.
Yes, miss. Oh, here's the gentleman now, miss. You may come in, sir.
Thank you. Miss Barrett.
How do you do, Mr. Brownie?
Oh, dear, Miss Barrett, at last. At last.
I've had to put off the pleasure of meeting you much longer than I wished.
Would you ever have received me if I hadn't been so tiresomely insistent?
As you know from my letters, I've not been at all well during the winter, and I... But won't you take off your cape?
I thank you. You may think, Miss Barrett, that this is the first time I've been here. You're quite wrong, you know.
Patrick...
Quite wrong. I've seen this room more times than I can remember. It's as familiar to me as my own study at home. Before I came in, I knew just how your books were arranged. Just how that tendril of ivy slanted across the window panes.
Oh, come, Mr. Browning. I know that Mr. Kenyon is never tired of talking about his friends. But I can't believe that he described my room to you in detail.
I dragged out of him all the details I possibly could, and my imagination supplied the rest. I had read your verses, and I was determined to find out all I could about you.
I suppose Mr. Kenyon has told you that I am a dying woman.
We're all of us dying.
And that our family life was one of unrelieved gloom.
Yes, he hinted at something of the sort.
He really shouldn't say such things. Frankly now, Mr. Browning, do you find me such a very pitiable object?
I find you, as I expected to find you, full of courage and gaiety. We have come together at last, and I don't intend to let you go again. No, listen. Give me your hands.
Oh.
There. I've more life than is good for one man. It seethes and races in me. Mayn't I give it to you? Don't you feel new life tingling and prickling up your fingers and arms right into your heart and brain?
Oh, please, Mr. Browning, please let go of my hands.
Well?
You are really rather an overwhelming person, and in sober truth, I'm...
Now, don't tell me again that you're afraid of me. You're not. It's life you're afraid of, and that shouldn't be.
Life?
Yes.
Well, when life becomes a series of electric shocks...
Yes, it's as bad as all that.
Indeed, yes. Do you affect other people in the same way?
They've often told me so.
No wonder I hesitated about meeting you, much as I wanted to. Something of your disturbing vitality must have come to me from your letters and poems.
I think I must have been quite as nervous as you.
You, Mr. Brown?
Oh, yes. And I'm anything but a nervous man as a rule. But that moment was the climax of my life. Up to now. Miss Barrett, do you remember the first letter I ever wrote to you?
Yes, indeed. It was a wonderful letter.
You may have thought I'd dashed it off in a fit of white-hot enthusiasm over your poems. I didn't. I weighed every word of every sentence. And of one sentence in particular, this sentence. I love your books with all my heart. And I love you, too. Do you remember?
Yes. And I thought it charmingly impulsive of you.
But I tell you, there was nothing impulsive about it. That sentence was as deeply felt and as anxiously thought over as any sentence I've ever written. All these months, since I first read your poems, I've been haunted by you. And today, you are the center of my life.
If I were to take you seriously, Mr. Browning, it would, of course, mean the quick finish of a friendship which promises to be very pleasant to both of us.
Why?
You know very well that love, in the sense you apparently use the word, has no place and can have no place in my life.
Why?
For many reasons, but let this suffice. As I told you before, I am a dying woman.
I refuse to believe it. You must never say such a thing again. I forbid you to.
Forbid, Mr. Bryant?
Yes, forbid. Isn't it only fair that if you forbid me to speak of you as I feel and I accept your orders... As I must. But I should be allowed a little forbidding as well.
Yes, but
oh, Miss Barrett, what a splendid beginning to our friendship. We've known each other a bare half hour, and yet we've talked of life and death and love. We've ordered each other about, and we've almost quarreled. Could anything be happier and more promising? With your permission, I'm going now. Mr. Kenyon impressed upon me to make my first visit as short as possible, as strangers tire you. Not that I'm a stranger. Still, I can see that you are tired. Miss Barrett, when may I call again?
I don't quite know.
Will next Wednesday suit you?
Yes, I think so. Perhaps it would be better...
Next Wednesday, then.
But I...
At 3:30 again?
Yes, but I...
Au revoir, then.
Goodbye.
Au revoir.
Au revoir. Oh. Au revoir.
We shall be back with the Barretts of Wimpole Street in just a minute.
Some things in life are obvious and easy. If you have a business providing a good service or selling a product, you need to let people know. But how do you do that? Easy. Just tell them here on SpringbokRadio.com. Internet radio is about talking to people in their own homes. Your message becomes part of the sound they've chosen to listen to. To find out more about advertising on SpringbokRadio.com, contact Dave Dupria on Johannesburg 011-678-5176 or for outside South Africa 27-611-678-5176 or email Dave at SpringbokRadio.com.
And now the second act of tonight's play, The Barretts of Wimpole Street.
I congratulate you, Miss Elizabeth. You've made remarkable progress in these past 3 months, and I take no credit for it.
Oh, but Doctor,
I mean it, my dear. The wish to live is better than a dozen physicians. Well, now, about the future. Another winter in London must, if possible, be avoided. If you continue picking up strength as you're doing, I see no reason against your travelling to Italy by October.
Italy? Oh, Doctor, do you really mean it?
Why not? I've been given to understand that you've set your heart on Italy.
Italy? Oh, Doctor, my promised land, which I never thought to see otherwise than in dreams.
Yes, yes, that's right. Well, my dear Miss Barrett, goodbye. Please don't get up. I'm delighted with your improvements. And now a little talk with your father about Italy. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Doctor. Italy. Oh, Arabelle, it's all but settled. I'm going to Italy.
Italy?
The doctor says I'll be quite fit to travel by October. Oh, I don't know what I'm saying. Oh, I'm quite off my head with excitement.
How wonderful for you. I'm so glad.
You think Papa will consent?
Oh, but of course he will. Dr. Chambers is putting it before him as strongly as he can.
Surely he'd never have the heart to refuse when he realizes all this Italian trip means to me.
No, dear. No.
Have you seen him this afternoon?
Yes.
What was he like?
Oh, quite sunny. He called me puss, and he never does that when he's in one of his moods.
Oh, Arabelle, Papa will let me go, won't he? Say something.
He'll never give his consent. Never.
But Dr. Chambers...
It won't make any difference, Elizabeth. Papa will never allow you out of his sight. I know.
Elizabeth, are you mad sitting here with this window open?
I was so enjoying the fresh air.
Everything in moderation, my dear. Dr. Chambers has just left me.
Yes, Papa.
Well?
Didn't Dr. Chambers speak to you about next winter?
He talked, if I may say so, a great deal of nonsense.
But, Papa...
What is it?
Didn't he tell you that I should avoid spending next winter in England?
Well?
And that he thinks I should be fit to travel to Italy in October?
It's out at last. And how long has this precious plot been hatching, may I ask?
It's now several weeks since Dr. Chambers first mentioned Italy as a real possibility.
I see. And do your brothers and sisters know anything of this delightful project?
I believe I mentioned it to them.
You believe you mentioned it to them? You've discussed your plans with a lot of them, I suppose.
Oh, Papa, what does it matter? My only...
Matter? Reason... Not in the least. It's nothing at all that I alone should be shut out of my favorite daughter's confidence. Treated like a cipher. Ignored. Insulted.
Insulted?
Grossly insulted. When that fellow Chambers sprung your carefully prepared plan on me, and I naturally expressed my astonishment and displeasure, he became extremely offensive.
Believe me, Papa, my one reason for not worrying you with this Italian idea before was that
the fear that I should nip it in the bud at once. Exactly. I quite understand.
Okay.
No, I beg you to spare me explanations and excuses.
But, Papa...
Didn't it even once occur to you that all through those long, dark months you proposed to enjoy yourself in Italy, your father would be left here utterly alone?
Alone?
Utterly alone. Your brothers and sisters might as well be shadows for all the companionship they afford me. And you... Oh, my child, don't think that I haven't noticed that you, too, now that you're stronger and no longer wholly dependent on me, are slowly drawing away from your father.
It's not true.
It is true. And in your heart, you know it's true.
No.
New life, new interests, new pleasures, new friends. And little by little, I am being pushed into the background. I, who used to be your whole world. I, who love you.
But...
No. There is nothing more to be said. You are at liberty to do as you wish. And if you go, I hope you will sometimes spare a thought for your father.
Oh.
Who's that? Come in.
If you please, Mr. Browning has called.
That fellow again.
I showed Mr. Browning into the drawing room, Miss, seeing you were engaged.
Would you like to meet Mr. Browning, Papa?
Certainly not. I should have thought you knew by this time that I never inflict myself on my children's friends. You may show Mr. Browning up.
Very good, sir.
Mr. Browning appears to consider this his second home.
I have not seen him since last Wednesday.
Indeed.
Mr. Browning.
Oh, but how splendid. This is the fourth time you've received me standing.
If I ever receive you for my sofa again, you may put it down to my bad manners and nothing else.
I will, with all my heart, sir. I will. Now tell me quickly. I've been dithering with suspense all day. You've seen the doctor. What does he say?
Dr. Chambers was astonished at my improvement.
Say that again.
Oh, must I? The whole sentence?
I should like to see it in letters of fire burning at me from these four walls. This is the best moment I've had since I got your note giving me permission to call on you. How many years ago was that?
3 months.
Oh, absurd. We've always been friends. I've known you a lifetime and over. So he was astonished, was he? Splendid. Of course, I never doubted once that you'd turn the corner someday. The world isn't rich enough to afford the waste of such a life as yours. But even I little dreamt recovery would be so rapid. And Italy, as the doctor agreed about your wintering there.
Yes.
And when do you think you'll be fit for traveling?
The middle of October, unless there's a relapse.
Relapse? There isn't such a word. October? Extraordinary. For you know, October suits my own plans to perfection.
Your plans?
Don't you remember my telling you that I'd thought of wintering in Italy myself? Well, now I'm quite decided. May I call on you often in Italy? Where do you intend to stay? Why are you laughing?
In Italy, I'm afraid you'll need 7-league boots when you call on me.
And what do you mean?
I shall be at 50 Wimpole Street next winter.
Here?
Yes.
But... didn't you tell me that the doctors...
Doctors may propose, but the decision rests elsewhere.
Oh, your father.
Yes.
He has vetoed the plan?
No, not exactly. But I'm quite sure that it will be impossible for me to go.
But didn't the doctor make it clear to him that this move of yours may mean all the difference between life and death?
It's rather hard to explain to someone who doesn't know all the circumstances. You see, Papa is very devoted to me.
Devoted?
Very devoted to me, and depends a lot on my companionship. He hasn't any points of contact with my brothers and sisters. If I were away for 6 months,
Miss Barrett, may I speak plainly?
Do you think you'd better? I know more or less how you feel about this, but you don't quite understand the situation. How should you?
Very well, then. I'll say nothing. Oh, you tell me I don't understand. You're quite right. I don't. You tell me he's devoted to you. I don't understand a devotion that demands favors as if they were rights. Demands duty and respect and obedience and love. Demands all and takes all and gives nothing in return. I don't understand a devotion that spends itself in petty tyrannies and gross bullying. I don't understand a devotion that grudges you any ray of light or glimpse of happiness and doesn't even stop at risking your life to gratify its colossal selfishness. Devotion! Give me good, sound, honest hatred rather than devotion like that.
Mr. Browning, I must ask
you... Forgive me, but I won't be silent any longer. At our first meeting, you forbade me to speak of love. There was to be nothing more than friendship between us. I obeyed you. But I knew well enough. We both knew that I was to be much more than just your friend. Even before I passed that door and our eyes first met across the room, I loved you. And I've gone on loving you. And I love you now more than words can tell. And I shall love you to the end and beyond. You know that. You've always known.
Yes. Yes, I've always known. Now, for pity's sake. For pity's sake, leave me.
Oh, no.
Oh, please. Please, let me go. Leave me. We must never see each other again.
I shall never let you go. I shall never leave you.
Oh,
Elizabeth.
No,
Elizabeth.
No. Oh, Robert, please have mercy on me.
Oh, Elizabeth, my darling.
Oh. Oh, Robert. I love you. I love you. I love you.
And yet you asked me to take my marching orders and go out of your life.
Yes, Robert, for what have I to give you? I have so little of all that love asks for. I have no beauty, no health. I'm no longer young.
I love you.
I should have refused to see you again after our first meeting. For I loved you then, though I would have denied it even to myself.
And with those words ringing in my ears, I'm to turn my back on you and go.
Robert, can't you see how impossible?
I've never yet turned my back on a friend or an enemy. Am I likely to turn it on you?
Robert, have you thought what your position here would be like if you went on seeing me after today?
Yes.
We should have to keep our love secret from everyone. There's a whisper if it gets to my father's ears.
I know.
If he had the least suspicion that you are more than a friend, the door would be slammed in your face. My letters supervised, and my life made unbearable.
I thought yours was the courage that dared the utmost, careless of defeat. Here's life, life, offering the best that life can give. And you dare not grasp at it for fear it will turn to dust in your hands. I never thought you were a coward.
A coward? I? Yes, I am a coward, Robert. A coward through and through. It is not for myself that I'm afraid.
I know that, my darling.
What's another disaster, great or small, to me, who've known little but disaster all my life? But you're a fighter. You were born for victory and triumph. If disaster came to you through
yes,
me...
Yes, I'm a fighter, but I'm sick of fighting alone. I need a comrade at arms to fight beside
not
me.
Not one already wounded in the battle.
Wounded, but undefeated, undaunted, unbroken.
Yes, but
what
I...
What finer comrade could a man ask
but
for?
But Robert...
No.
But Robert...
Oh, no. Oh. No, Elizabeth. No.
You had really better let Wilson help you up the last few stairs, Bob.
No, no, Wilson, don't touch me.
But my dear, you...
Oh, there. All the way up and without one pause or help of any kind. And I feel splendid. I'm just a little out of breath, that's all. No, don't touch me. I'm perfectly all right. Oh, the post has come. Please give me these letters, Araba.
Oh, here you are.
Thank you. Oh. This is from Papa.
From Papa? But he's returning today.
Perhaps he's been detained.
Oh, do you think so?
Oh. Oh, Araba.
What is it?
We're leaving.
Leaving?
Yes, leaving this house. Leaving London. Listen. This is to let you know that we shall be leaving London on Monday the 22nd of this month. I have taken a famous house at Bookham in Surrey, some 20 miles from London. I have felt for some time now that your present feverishly restless mode of life in London will have continued to affect you harmfully, both physically and morally.
Oh,
and that's not quite all. He finishes up with a characteristic touch of humor. Yes, he signs himself Your Loving Papa.
22nd, that gives us barely a fortnight longer here.
My feverishly restless mode of life. A few drives, a few calls of my friends, a few visitors. I wonder he doesn't describe me as a recklessly dissipated woman. He made my going to Italy impossible. And now I'm to be cut off any little pleasures I've begun to find here.
Oh, I know, dear, I understand. And I'm very sorry for you. The change won't hit me so hard. My only ties in London are my mission work and district visiting. But you and Henrietta, you...
Oh, that's Mr. Browning's knock. I'll go out this way.
But Arabelle! Come in.
Elizabeth. Oh, Elizabeth.
Oh, Robert. Hmm.
Look at me. What's the matter?
Nothing.
Has your father returned?
No, we expect him any moment.
Those talking eyes of yours give you away hopelessly. Something's gone wrong. What is it? You must tell me.
Read that letter on the mantel, please, Robert.
From your father?
Yes. Well?
I think, by the look of it, you crumpled up this letter furiously, and I'm quite sure you pitched it into the grate.
Yes, I did.
Why?
Oh, Robert, don't you see what this means to us? It will soon be made impossible for me to see you at all.
This letter may mean all that, but it means a great deal more that you haven't been able to grasp.
A great deal more?
It means that you will be in Italy before the month is out.
Italy?
Yes, and with me.
Robert.
It means that we must be married at once.
Do you know what you're saying?
Yes, I know what I'm saying, and I repeat it. We must be married at once, my darling. Listen to
me. No, please don't touch me. Whatever you say is madness. I can't marry you. I can never marry you.
You can and you shall. You'll marry me if I have to carry you out of this house and up to the altar. Do you seriously imagine I'm going to allow myself to be elbowed out of your life now and just to satisfy the selfish jealousy of a man whom I no longer believe to be sane? You ought to know me better than that by this time.
Robert,
oh, no. Listen to me, Elizabeth. This will be our best plan of campaign. The family leave here on the 22nd, so we have barely a fortnight in which to get everything done. You told me last week that Mr. Headley had invited your sisters to picnic in Richmond Park next Saturday, so the house will be conveniently empty. We'll meet at Marylebone Church and be married quietly sometime in the morning. I'll see about a license at once and interview the vicar.
Well,
it would be madness to leave England on the same day. You'll need all the rest and quiet you can get before the journey. So, directly after we're married, you'd better return here and take things very easily for a day or two. You'll have 6 days if we leave on Saturday.
Oh, stop! No. I can't listen to you.
For some time now, I've kept a careful note of the sailings from Southampton in case of just such an emergency as this. The packet leaves the royal pair on Saturdays at 9 o'clock. We must catch the 5 o'clock express at Vauxhall. It arrives at Southampton at 8.
And I've always believed Papa was the most overbearing man in the world.
And yet you've known me for some time now.
But I mustn't give way, Robert. I mustn't. I dare.
There's one other thing, my darling. It's the utmost importance that we must settle at once. You can't possibly travel without a maid. Wilson must have a pretty shrewd idea of our relationship. You say she's entirely devoted to you, but do you think she'll be willing to come abroad with us?
Robert, have you ever thought that my strength may break down on the journey?
Yes.
Suppose I were to die on your hands. Robert, will you give me a little time?
Time is short, my dear.
Yes, I know, but I must have a little time. I can't decide now. I daren't. I feel something must happen soon to show me definitely the way. Please give me a few hours before I sleep tonight. I'll write and tell you of my decision. Please, Robert.
You promise me that?
I promise.
Very well.
Oh, thank you.
Shall I go now?
Please.
Goodbye, Elizabeth. And I assure you, nothing will make me alter my plans. Nothing.
Thank you.
You are listening to The Barretts of Wimpole Street.
Again.
Oh, Wilson, what's happened now?
Your father arrived and found the captain and Miss Henrietta talking together in the parlor in an intimate manner.
No.
He ordered the captain to
leave. You listen to me, Henrietta.
You can hear them. Oh, Miss Elizabeth, don't go through, don't.
What is this fellow to you, Henrietta?
I told you, he's a friend of ours.
What is he to you?
A friend.
Is that all?
Yes.
You liar.
Oh, let me go.
What is this man to you? Answer me. Answer me.
Oh, Papa, please.
Answer me.
Oh, don't.
Answer me.
Oh, Papa, I loved him.
You.
Let her go, Papa. I won't have it. Let her go at once.
And you? You knew of this friendship?
I've known for some time that Henrietta loves Captain Cook, and I've given her all my sympathy.
You dare to tell me?
And I would have given her my help as well if I'd had it to give.
I'll deal with you later. Get up.
Oh, Papa, listen to me, please.
Get up.
Please.
Get up. Sit there. How long has this been going on? Do you hear me? How long have you been carrying on with this fellow?
I have known him for a little over a year.
And you've been with him often?
Yes.
Alone?
Yes.
Where?
I've met him in the park and...
And here?
Yes.
Here and alone? Have you met him in this house alone?
Yes.
So, now listen to me. Something like this happened a year or two ago. And I thought I'd crushed the devil in you then. I was wrong. It needed sterner measures than I had the courage to use. So now, unless I have your solemn word that you will neither see nor in any way communicate with this man again, you leave my house at once. You have your choice. Take it.
Is it nothing to you that I shall hate you for this to the end of my life?
Less than nothing.
But I must let Captain Cook know.
I will deal with Captain Cook.
Oh, Papa.
Will you give me your word? Neither to see nor to communicate with this man again.
I have no choice.
You will now go to your room and remain there until you have my permission to leave it. Have you anything to say to me, Elizabeth?
No. No, I have nothing to say at all.
Then I must leave you under my extreme displeasure.
Oh, Miss, you shouldn't have.
Wilson, are you my friend?
Your friend, Miss?
Yes, my friend. I'm in need of friendship and help at the moment.
I don't quite understand, Miss Barr, but I'd do anything to help you.
You would? And I know I can trust you.
Yes, indeed, Miss.
Wilson, next Saturday, I'm going to marry Mr. Browning.
Marry?
Yes. Of course, nobody in this house knows, and nobody must know.
Oh, Lord, Miss. I did just think not, indeed.
We've been married secretly at Marylebone Church. Will you come with me?
Me, Miss? Oh, yes, Miss, and gladly.
Directly afterwards, I shall return here for a few days.
And then... Here with Mr. Brown?
No. Just alone with you. And then on the following Saturday, I shall join Mr. Browning, and we're going abroad. We're going to Italy. Oh. Will you come with us?
To Italy?
Yes, will you come with me?
Oh, well, Miss, I can't see as I was going to help myself. Why, you'd never get to Italy without me.
Oh, then you'll come. Oh, I'm so glad, Wilson. I'll tell Mr. Browning. I'm writing to him now. I'll say his plans can proceed as arranged.
far. I'm sorry. In my flurry to get the luggage off to the railway station yesterday, I clean forgot to pack these rugs. And there was heaps of room in the carpet bag.
Never mind.
I do hope we haven't forgotten anything else.
And if we have, it won't matter much. Mr. Browning insisted that we should travel as lightly as possible. We should be able to get all we need in Paris.
Miss, it doesn't seem possible we'll be in Paris tomorrow. And you are married.
You're sure, Wilson? They quite understood at the livery stables exactly when and where the cab was to meet us.
Oh, yes, miss. The cab will be at the corner of Wimpole Street at 3:30 punctual. It won't take us more than 10 minutes to get to Hodgson's library. And then Mr. Browning will have us in his charge. Your husband, miss.
Don't say the word,
dear.
I'm foolishly nervous, but I can't help it. The very walls seem to be listening. There's no one in the house I know except Miss Henrietta, and she would have gone out by now. This waiting is killing me.
Have you finished writing your letter?
Yes, yes, I've written to the whole family to tell them what I've done and to wish them goodbye. I've just been reading over my letter to my father to see if there was something I could add, something, anything. I can't think.
Least said, soonest mended, miss. Oh, Miss Ball, there's a lot I'd give to be here tonight when the master reads your letter and knows you've been a married lady for almost a week.
Don't, Wilson, don't. The very thought terrifies me. I can see his face. I can hear his voice. Thank heaven we should be miles and miles away. Oh, it's 1 hour and 20 minutes, Kel. Will the time never pass?
Wilson, I wish to speak to Miss Ball alone.
Yes, miss.
You remember, Elizabeth, that Papa threatened to turn me out of the house unless I swore not to write or to see Surtees?
Yes.
Well, I'm going to break that promise today.
Are you, dear?
Yes. And I shall glory in breaking it. I intend to see him. And if Papa asks me where I've been, I shall go out of my way to lie to him as often as I can. I'm going now.
Oh, Miss Ball, Miss Ball.
What is it, Wilson? Shut the door.
The master, oh. Miss... He's just come in. Yes, just this minute. He must have heard. Someone must have told him.
Be quiet.
Papa, what on earth's the matter?
Nothing's the matter. It's only that Papa hasn't been to see me for 10 days now. Ever since, you remember. And seems of forgiveness are always trying. Put my hat and cloak away, Wilson, quick.
I don't believe that's all.
You're as white as a sheet. What did Wilson mean?
Ah, is there anything I can...
No. Don't speak. Don't ask me anything. You know nothing. You understand? Nothing.
But those
rugs, Wilson. Quickly. Come in.
You're home early, Papa.
What's the matter with that girl?
Wilson?
Yes, and with you?
Nothing, Papa.
Where have you been, Henrietta?
Nowhere.
Where are you going?
To tea with Aunt Headley.
Is that the truth?
Yes.
You remember your oath?
Yes.
Have you kept it?
Yes.
Are you going to keep it?
Yes.
I want to speak to your sister. You can go. Do you know why I came back so early?
No, Papa.
Because I could bear it no longer. It's 10 days since last I saw you.
Am I to blame for that,
you
Papa?
You dare to ask me such a question? Weren't your party and your sister's shameless conduct? Haven't you encouraged her? And did you expect to go scot-free of my displeasure? I've not come to speak about that, but to put it behind me, to forget it. I wonder, my child, have you been half so miserable these last 10 days as your father?
Miserable?
Do you suppose I'm happy when I'm bitterly estranged from all I love in the world? Do you know that night after night I had to call up all my willpower to hold me from coming here to forgive you?
Papa.
All my willpower. I tell you, all my sense of duty and right and justice. But today I could bear it no longer. The want of your face and your voice became a torment. I had to come.
No. Papa, can't you see? Won't you ever see that strength may be weakness? And your sense of justice and right and duty all mistaken and wrong?
What do you mean?
Papa,
no, be silent. Don't answer me. Mistaken and wrong? You don't know what you're saying.
You'll only listen to me.
No.
But Papa...
If there were even a vestige of truth in what you say, my whole life would be a hideous mockery. For always, Through all misfortunes and miseries, I've been upheld by knowing beyond a doubt what was right, and doing it unflinchingly, however bitter the consequences, and bitter they've been. It's been my heavy cross that those whom I was given to guide and rule have always fought against the right, that I knew to be the right, and was in duty bound to impose upon them, even you, even your mother. Yes, your mother, but not at first. You, my eldest child, were born of love and only love. But the others, long before they came, the rift had begun to open between your mother and me. Not that she ever opposed me, never once, or put into words what she felt. She was silent and dutiful and obedient. But love died out and fear took its place.
No!
All because I saw the right and did it.
Merciful God. What she must have suffered.
And what of me?
You. Oh, Papa. Then you... you still loved her. After her love for you had died.
Love? What's love? She was my wife. You don't understand.
And all those children. Born in fear. Oh, it's horrible.
Ma, my dear, don't... I shouldn't have spoken. I shouldn't have told you all that. Forget it, child. Take your hands from your face.
I won't listen to you, I won't.
You must. You shall. It's time a little reality were brought into your dream of life. Do you suppose I should have guarded my house like a dragon from this so-called love if I hadn't known from my own life all it entails of cruelty and degradation and remorse? Through years of tormenting abstinence, I strangled it in myself. And as long as I have breath in my body, I'll keep it away from those I was given to protect and care for. You understand me?
Yes. I understand you.
Very well. We must turn over this ugly page and forget what was on it. You're cold as ice. Why are you trembling?
I shall never forget what you said.
Never forget? But... and yet... perhaps that's as well. But don't let this raise any further barrier between us. I've told you how all these past months I've seemed to feel you slipping little by little away from me. Your love is all I have left to me in the world.
I can't bear it. I can't bear it anymore. Let me go, Papa. Please, let me go.
Forgive me, my dear. I've said too much. I was carried away. I'll leave you now.
Please.
I shall see you again tonight.
No, not tonight.
I shall pray for you.
Pray for me tonight. Yes, pray for me tonight, if you will.
He's gone to the study.
We must go. Now.
But once, Miss.
At once. Help me with my cloak.
But the cab won't be there yet, not for an hour.
There's no water in the streets. I can't stay here any longer. I'm frightened. Get your cloak and bonnet.
Walk about the streets, Miss. You can't. You can't. Besides, the master's at home. He may see us leaving.
Where did I put this letter?
Here.
Get your cloak and bonnet, quick.
But if he saw us leaving.
He can't stop
me. Miss Ball.
He can't stop me. I don't belong to him anymore. I belong to my husband. Papa can kill me. But he can't stop me.
I dare, Miss, I dare.
Then I must go alone.
You can't do that.
Wilson, things have passed between my father and me which forced me to leave this house at once. Until today, I didn't realize quite how unforgivably I've been driven to deceive him. Until today, I've never really known him. If you want to draw back, you need never reproach yourself. This, after all, is no affair of yours. But I must go now. Bring the rugs, Wilson. I had better carry Flush.
Yes, Miss. The study door shut and it's all quiet.
Very well. Go quickly. Let's go. Go.
Bar, dear, I want... Bar? Elizabeth?
strange. A letter for me. Here, look at me.
No. No. Married. No.
Oh, this is funny. Funny.
Stop that, Arabella. Stop it at once.
Married. Gone. Married. She's married. She's gone. Married and gone.
Arabella. Arabella, pull yourself together at once. Where's Bar? Anthony, where's Bar?
She's married Mr. Robert Browning.
Married? Where is she?
She's gone. Those letters she's written to all of us. She's gone. She was married last Saturday.
No.
Papa.
Is he?
Yes, he's dressing for dinner.
What's to be done?
Someone must give him Bar's letters.
Let me. I should love to.
Hush. He's coming.
What is the meaning of this? Who was making that hideous noise just now? Where is Elizabeth? Do you hear me? Where is your sister?
She left you this letter.
Left me? What do you mean?
She left letters for all of us. And this is yours.
You must forgive her. Papa, you must forgive her. Not for her sake, but for yours. I thought I hated you, but I don't. I pity you. I pity you. And if you've any pity for yourself, forgive her.
Forgive her. That is deceived. Lied. Elizabeth married. A dog. Yes, I have a dog. Annabelle.
Papa, forgive her, Papa.
Trust must be destroyed at once.
But, Papa...
You will take it to the vet tonight. You understand me? Tonight, you understand me? It must be destroyed.
I really don't see what the poor little animal has done to deserve
it. You understand me?
In her letter to me, Bar writes that she's taken Flush with her. There's nothing you can do, Papa. Nothing.
That was The Barretts of Wimpole Street, produced for Playhouse 90 by Anne Freed and directed by Henry Diffenthal. As Edward Mouton Barrett, you heard D. Mervyn Johns. Elizabeth Barrett was played by Yolande Dottman. And as Robert Browning, you heard Harold Freed. Others in the cast were Moira Winslow, Maureen Adair, Tim Sutcliffe, and Mildred Doherty. We hope you've enjoyed tonight's play. Be sure to tune in next Wednesday night for another theatre date with the great in Playhouse 90. Brought to you for your listening pleasure from the stages and studios, producers and playwrights of the world, by your hosts, the makers of Bayer Aspirin, Stern's Pine Tar and Honey, Phillips Milk of Magnesia, and California Syrup of Figs. So until next week's Playhouse 90, a very good night to you all.